That's Anthony Berger at the piano. God Gave the Song. And we're here to classic from Jamie Owens Collins' Hard Times, and from the Martins, their song Above It All. Good morning to you. Now about 11 minutes after the hour. And David, guess who's here?
What? Who? Who?
Just
who?
fresh back from Israel, the Reverend Dr. John Delancey from Glenshaw, Pennsylvania.
Hi, John.
Reverend
John.
Hi.
Hello there. Welcome. We missed you. We missed you.
Jeff? Well, you know what? I did try to connect with you a couple times when I was in Israel, but it was over the Memorial Day weekend, and I
was probably watching a ball game and barbecuing, I would guess.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do.
But I'm sorry I missed you. I would love to have known that you were there. We could have recorded something, but that's twice now when I just haven't been available when you were ready. So we're out of sync with each other, John.
Yeah, I think so, but sorry about that.
Well, that's okay. It's not your fault. Israel is a busy place. We've been getting news stories out of Israel and Syria and Lebanon, and we were a little bit worried about you there. Any signs of tension or extra defensive measures? What's the hubbub in Israel these days?
None whatsoever. I'm not sure what you hear, but that's sort of typical how it works in the media. You hear something, and the quick assumption is to think that, wow, the country is maybe on alert or some kind of issue going on with the northern neighbors, but none whatsoever. Life is normal 100% in Israel, and that's just the bottom line.
Well, normal is like just a few miles away from disaster. They just know how to handle that over there.
Well, for instance, we even looked into Syria again, and, we're 2 miles from Syria. There's no restrictions, no warnings, it's just normal life. And, if you turn your TV on, you might see something that, it might surprise you, but certainly nothing out of the ordinary with issues of safety. So we had a great time.
Well, I did see an interview with one of the Israeli government officials, and I've forgotten his title, but they were talking about the prospect of having Russian missiles delivered to Hezbollah and the Syrians, and he just seemed cool, calm, and collected. He was like, we can handle it. We'd like everybody else to pay attention and help us out, but need be, we'll just take care of things.
Certainly that might down the road be an issue that will need to be addressed, but in terms of, people looking over their shoulder, even the 20,000 or so live in the Golan, just a few miles from Syria and Lebanon and Hezbollah too, no one lives in fear. That's just how it is.
So. Do they have designated shelters for public safety, bomb shelters, or is there a subway? Probably not a subway system, I'm guessing.
No subway, but every house has to be built with a bomb shelter in it. Mm-hmm. And every community has, public bomb shelters and so forth, just the way it is. Usually it's a room in the house that's a little extra fortified, so you can actually use the room, but it doubles if you actually need to use it for seeking refuge. But
already. Well, there's a difference right there, I think. It's kind of in the back of their minds, and they're just living day to day. How was the trip? How long were you there? Where'd you go?
Excellent trip. This was a very unique trip. I did some hikes, and I wrote the program to include some experiences that no other tour does. So a lot of it was hikes or approaches to a site that were unique. For instance, we walked up the ramp at Masada. Usually no one does that. That's the Western approach to Masada. We walked in the Wadi Zin. It's mentioned in the context of Moses and the Israelites. These are climbs that require ladders and handholds. We walked up Arbel, a mountain in the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee. Very historical area where Jews actually used to hide in the caves about halfway down the cliffs of Arbel. Both Herod, early on in his kingship, if you will, as well as later on in the Jewish revolt in 66, Jews used to hang out here in these caves. They sought refuge in these caves.
Now, where in Israel are these caves?
These would be the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee.
Ah, okay.
And the for instance, both Herod and later the Romans in 66, they lowered down themselves in ropes and actually, you know, unfortunately pulled these Jews who were hiding, seeking refuge in these caves. They pulled them out of the caves and made them fall to their death. Oh. So very interesting history that goes along with the walk or hike that we did. It was about a two-hour hike, and I can show you pictures and your listeners some interesting pictures of these experiences.
Will those be set up on your blog site this morning?
Actually, I blogged every day of the trip, mm-hmm. so those pictures, about 20 sample pictures from each day, are posted on the website.
And of course, that's over at biblicalisraeltours.com. Mm-hmm. You can link right to John's blog there and see those pictures and see what his day-to-day activities were like. Anything new archaeologically? That's a silly question, isn't it? It'd be old.
Well, we did go to a newer site, Gamla, which is an interesting site. We talked about synagogues that date to the time of Christ before, and this was one of seven. We talked about Magdala already last couple weeks ago, but Gamla is also a first century synagogue. It's laid out almost exactly like Magdala, but there's no doubt that Jesus would have been familiar with this synagogue. It's located in a city called Gamla, which was considered the Masada of the north. It's a very interesting layout. The topography of the site makes it very secure, and of course it was a prominent place mentioned by Josephus during the first Jewish revolt.
Now, where is it in relation to Galilee?
It's a good question. It's on the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. Okay. And that's a picture I'd like to send you sometime, so that you can post. But they call it the camel of the north. It's actually, from the side angle, the site looks like a humped camel. But there's a first century synagogue. It takes about 45 minutes to, maybe not that much, 30 minutes to walk down to the site. But it's a prominent site, and again, because of the difficulty of getting to the site, not too many groups go there.
Now, do we have indications in the Bible that Jesus was on the northeast shore of Galilee?
Well, Bethsaida most likely was on the northeast corner.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Probably not too far east. There's one instance where in Mark 5, Jesus goes to the area of the Gadarenes. Mm-hmm. And meets the demoniac. But the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee was Gentile infested. So most likely,
you wouldn't
want
to go there. No, you
only spent time in the northwest corner. But this northeast corner was still very Jewish. And no doubt Jesus spent time there as well.
Now, you mentioned Bethsaida. What wasn't Andrew and Peter? Oh, Philip was from there too. But there were several, weren't there, from Bethsaida?
Yeah. Those three, John chapter 1, verse 44, I believe, tells us almost in passing that they were from Bethsaida. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually the area where Jesus fed the 5,000. Mm-hmm. There's a reference in the Luke passage about that. So Bethsaida has an interesting dilemma, though, because there's really no first century ruins at the site that they identified today as Bethsaida.
Mm-hmm.
There is a team from the University of Nebraska, the Lincoln campus, who have been responsible for digging there. But there are some archaeological ruins there, but unfortunately there's no evidence that a first century community lived there.
Well, but so if there was a synagogue there, there must have been other people.
Well, there wasn't a synagogue there, and unlike Chorazim or other areas that were cities that were condemned, for instance, like Capernaum, Chorazim, and Bethsaida. But no doubt the real Bethsaida was still on this northeastern corner of the Sea of Galilee.
So there is work yet to do. There's still unexplored areas of Israel, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. In fact, Bethsaida is one example, because the site today, it's about a mile away from the water's edge. And you would think that the gospel text seems to indicate that the city was more or less on the water's edge, but that's not the case. So geographically, there's a problematic issue with the site. But in terms of other sites being excavated, There is a site that's just being done, and I'll visit it actually in July, called Abel Beit Mechah.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that. We talked about that a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope to dig there next year, and the excavation actually begins in 2 weeks, so it'll be interesting to see what they find. It was a city that was destroyed by the Assyrians in 722 BC, along with Ayon and Hatzor and some of these northern cities in the Golan.
What do you know about the water levels in Galilee? Because I know that back in the late 80s and 90s, the water levels were exceptionally low, and it occasioned a couple of finds, like the Jesus boat was found and so forth. How do water levels today, do we know? How does it compare with the first century? Because I'm just thinking if it was much deeper then, if there was more water than Bethsaida, what might have been farther back than we think.
Well, the water probably was higher, but when you take, for instance, the city of Capernaum, which is still, there are first century ruins, a mere 100 feet, actually, maybe 200 feet from the water's edge today. So I don't think the water could have been too much higher. Certainly, and thankfully, this year, because of the plentiful rainfall this winter, Sea of Galilee is actually up to a record level. So the water level is to an acceptable stage where the Israelis can actually use the water all summer long. I think the depth of the Sea of Galilee now is up to 122 feet. And in recent years, it has been down to as low as 110.
That's like the deepest part of the lake then.
Yeah, they measure that quite accurately and take level readings, if you will, all the time. But yes, in 86 was when the water level was so low. In fact, even in the last couple years, you can tell where the beach was in comparison to where it is now. The water is much higher, but still, even with the higher water levels, Bethsaida, for instance, is still about a mile away from the water's edge.
You mentioned subway systems. It just occurs to me that building a subway system would offer some unique challenges in Israel. Do you know, I presume it's in Jerusalem. Is that accurate? And do you know when it was built?
There is no really subway system at all. There's a light rail system now
that goes above ground. Okay.
But there is no subway system at all.
I thought you'd mentioned so. I figured digging, that'd go down to about the level of the first century, wouldn't it? Because it still astounds me that when you describe an archaeological site, you've got to dig down, various depths, I imagine, but 8, 10, 12, 15 feet to get back to where the land was 2,000 years ago.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I don't know how it is in Minnesota this time of year, but Pennsylvania has a lot of road construction going on. All love road construction, don't we?
Mm-hmm. It happens here too. Yep.
Well, when Israel does road construction, there's first what is called a rescue excavation that takes place in the process of widening a road, for instance. In fact, I just saw it going to Tel Aviv. The main road, Route 1, is being broadened to be three lanes on each side. Well, what happens is when they widen the road and find out that they are perhaps digging through some kind of archaeological ruin, there is what is called a rescue team excavation. And they will send out archaeologists to make sure that while widening the road that they don't come across and ruin, no pun intended, any archaeological structures that might be revealed or discovered in that process. So I can't imagine American road construction people taking the time to worry about whether they, in the process of widening the road, stopping construction completely in order to excavate. But that's how it's done in Israel. And I think on this trip I saw it probably three or four places where alongside of the road there's a tent in a 5 meter square or two, and they just make sure that in the process they are not destroying anything ancient.
Now that would be under the auspices of the Israeli government then.
It would be. And I'm not sure exactly who they get for these rescue excavations, but that's how important archaeology is to Israel. And of course, you know, as soon as you you know, destroy a site, it's destroyed for good. But they take great care in preserving anything archaeologically that certainly might shed light on the world of the past.
Okay. Very interesting. Sounds like it was a really physical kind of tour for your folks. Did you have a young, spry group with you, or were there some people willing to take some risks in climbing those cliff faces?
Well, everyone had the ability to climb. For instance, we climbed all the way up to Cave 1 at Qumran, which typically, if you go any further, it actually requires ropes. There were some technical climbers there with ropes and carabiners and so forth, but it was great to explore some of these sites and to approach a few sites in a very unique way. Qumran was one. Of course, we usually walk back to the farthest waterfalls at Engedi, but this trip was really complete with a lot of new experiences for people. And some of these hikes I haven't done myself and since my days of studying in Jerusalem. So it was very, very fulfilling.
Interesting. When's the next one? I think you're going back this month sometime, aren't you?
I'm going back this month, and actually 2 weeks from yesterday.
Boy, you're gonna have some frequent flyer miles racked up, I think. Back and forth.
Well, that's what happens, but this next trip is a 13-day, pretty extensive trip. Again, covering the south first. I think we'll be going to a few sites that are really rich with archaeology, but again, not too many groups go there. But I'm looking forward to it. It's a small group, but I'll be back also in July. I'm taking my daughter in July, so I'm looking forward to that.
That'd be a special trip, yeah. And listen, if you think you're going to be available to record a conversation so we can kind of keep our listeners updated on goings-on over there, we would love to do it. Maybe just an email, and we'll plan ahead a little bit if you can. I know that's kind of hard to do. But if you could say, you know, at 4 o'clock your time this afternoon, let's get together. Then I'll notice it. I'll see it. I hate to miss it. If you try to call and I'm not here, that just bothers me. Anyway, it's good to have you back. I'm glad it was a safe trip. Looks like it was a very special trip for lots of people. David, any questions, comments, observations?
Well, while you guys have been talking, I've been looking around for a site or a structure. And I think it's in the southeastern corner of the Sea of Galilee. And scientists or anthropologists are not really sure what it is. But they know it's man-made.
Southeastern, though.
Yeah, it's Decapolis. A kind of a long sloping structure. Could be a breakwater, could be underwater. Well, I don't know. I don't think there's any details to indicate it was an underwater temple, but you know, and I was trying to get more details about it to see if you knew anything about it.
I did read something about that. It's in the water, and it would require some underwater excavation and exploration. It was found by sonar or radar, and I'm not sure the depth of this, but they did come across this huge, massive structure, and they're actually not sure what it is, and that's the challenge of getting to it in a way that allows them to, you know, understand more.
Well, we'll look forward to some more information on that then.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Reverend Dr. John DeLancey is a pastor in Glenshaw, Pennsylvania, and our resident expert in archaeology. And he conducts Biblical Israel tours. You can visit their website from ours. You can link right there if you're listening this morning at brokenroadradio.com. There's a link over on the right-hand side of the page. Great photos over there. There's some biographical information from John and a link to his blog. You can see the pictures and day-to-day reporting that he does on his tours to Israel. I presume that the June tour is filled up, isn't it?
Yeah. We typically have to close these trips off about 45 days prior. So the July trip is actually closed as well. But October and November is wide open yet. And again, some of these sites that not too many groups go to, we'll be visiting them as well.
Oh, what an experience that would be. That just would be a great, great thing. John, thanks as always. Glad to have you back home safe and already packing for your next trip. And we'll see if we can't establish some contact while you're over there and get you on the air. But again, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you guys.
And hopefully we'll catch you next week as well.
See you, John.
Music from Sean Mullins on a Broken Road Radio Tuesday morning.